Hi everyone, my name's Tim, and this is...
Hi, I'm Melissa Michaels, and I'm the founder of Golden Bridge, and first generation teacher of Gabrielle Roth's Five Rhythms, and the thought leader of Somasource, a body of work that's rooted in the body and reaches out into the world in developmentally sound and culturally sensitive ways. So happy to be here with you, Tim.
And this is, I think, the third or the fourth ICMTA kind of podcast chat. Various members, somebody nominated me. I think Kathy Elman nominated me, and I asked Melissa if we could have a chat. We were both involved in the most recent teachers gathering, as many people will know. And there were questions I was left with about Melissa's work, the history, the future, and I thought it would make a nice conversation. So that's why we're here.
Thanks, Tim. I'm honored.
So my first question is, what's the difference between Golden Bridge and Somasource?
So Golden Bridge is a not-for-profit organization. It's the umbrella, it's the container, the mothership that hosts all the work that's come through me and now through the leaders that have grown up in our work. And we do all kinds of things within Golden Bridge. We have a training that brings up next generation leaders. That's called Somasource. I'll talk about that in a minute. And we do weekly, seasonal, all kinds of programming. We've published my stuff and some of our students' materials, music, written material. We do very deep, consistent, ongoing mentoring with individuals who come of age through our work. And we have a big summer institute that started many, many years ago with our youth camps. And I really developed this work by teaching in spaces where people were going through major life transitions, be it birth, adolescence, and eventually working in a number of other life passages, including life crises. I found myself being called into working with communities who had experienced a natural disaster, or there'd been a sudden significant death, or there were rituals that wanted to be made to mark the seasons, of course, but more subtle, nuanced life passages. Mm-hmm. And so I got really fascinated with the thresholds and where we found our ground and our pattern of how we worked was in our work with the adolescents, although these other life passages, including death, really have informed what we do throughout the life cycle. Mm-hmm. And then because of the nature of who we met, where I was invited to teach, who sent their young people to us, we all of a sudden found ourselves in a really deep, complex, cross-cultural dynamic on the dance floors. And we were called and required to wake up about how to work together across race, class, gender, culture, ability, and we're in that learning with all of humanity at this point. But we've been at it for a while, and in the crosshairs of the complexity of that, and we've made a lot of mistakes, and we've discovered really how to build those bridges. And you know, like any name, we name our child, and then the child has to wake up into themselves. Golden Bridge has been the same. What does it mean to be bridge builders as leaders, and how do we do that within ourselves and interpersonally between us and then out into the world? So that's been our destiny call as an organization, and remains that. And so full pause on that, and so, then I'll talk about Somasource in a minute.
Okay. Well, I'm curious about these communities where you found yourself, and I imagine there's some stories about the beginning and the route that you took. So obviously you can't cover everything, but what tell us a bit more about the history, and I'm curious about those communities that you found yourself called into, and just one or two examples maybe.
Yeah, well, it's come a variety of different ways. When I was 21 years old, I say I was airlifted by fate to South India. I just finished my undergraduate studies in architecture, actually, and I had come to this realization that the body is the metaphor of sacred space. Ultimately, it was a place I needed to inhabit, but that I could study the body as a way of understanding how to create environments for people to come inside and learn, heal, connect. And I went to India to do this architecture work and found out that it was absurd for me as this young white girl to be designing spaces for people I knew nothing about. And in fact, I'd had a less, my education wasn't as strong as the young Indian women who were my age, who I was in the architecture studio with. And that in and of itself was a revelation. So I stepped out of the studio and went to work in the villages and found myself really in love with the children. And of course, not speaking Tamil. And I had to use my body. And I write about this in my book, so it's not a new story to many people, but it was a seminal moment. I was 21 years old in that soul birthing time. And I had to find ways to connect. And I began to, I say, act out with my body in ways that were very different than the way I'd been acting out as a young, addicted, enraged teenager. And something opened in me, very profound. And it was, a spiritual call. Melissa, the children of the world are calling. And it was a soul stirring, and movement will be the universal language through which you will connect with the children of the world. Of course, I had no idea what that meant. I was just trying to do math with Tamil children. I came home from India. I had then been hired to go back there and take the next group of college students there. And I got pregnant with my first child. And so I didn't go back. And yet it stirred my soul so deeply. And a number of things happened that caused me to realize that the child that I first had to respond to was the one within myself, so that I could be a semi-connected mother and ultimately be able to really do something with that destiny call that had been awakened in me at that young age. And one thing led to the other. I had a near-death experience at the birth of my first child, and I was so disassociated, so I had to like start the work of unwinding trauma and understanding how that happened through the body. And then, of course, I met Gabrielle, began dancing, and I was so sympathetically aroused. All I could do was dance and dance and dance. Sitting, stillness, the parasympathetic nervous system were completely inaccessible to me, and I just had to move. So, fast forward 8 years, I did a lot of my own personal repair and began to find congruency, as Gabrielle would speak about, and home in this temple, and began to work with other families who were in the threshold of birth, because I started to see how the rhythms were a brilliant map for understanding what happens in the cycles of gestating and eventually moving into the birth process through transition into the new life. So I'm coming back to your question. Point being is that every step of my journey has been inside out. So as I was preparing to give birth to my second child, I was teaching and working with families, pregnant women, postpartum women, and their partners, and the babies. And I was at that point really in a strong, grounded place. And I had such an ecstatic, erotic experience with my second child. And it was like, okay, you got that one. Boom. And then I started to see who was being sent to me. I was teaching in a school, and parents were sending to me their teenage children because they saw that movement was, for lack of a better word, medicine. And we all know that that's true. But and I really just followed the breadcrumbs. I had one young woman was sent to me. She had dropped out of school. Her mother said, homeschool this person. And I developed a lot of the work that ultimately became SomaSource. And this beautiful being, Renee Sills, I had the privilege of adopting when her mother passed away at 17. And now she's just an epic leader out into the world. And because of that original connection in India, I had a sweet bond with the people there. And they asked me if they could send to our summer programs two of their emerging leaders, who, as it turns out, were the same age of the children in the same village that I was teaching at when I was 21 years old. This is X number of years later. And so Balu and Raji came and began to do the work with us. Some others came too, Satyan, Kalyan, you know, they came for shorter rides. And then somebody came to Boulder from South Africa and somebody introduced them to me and she fell in love with what we were doing. And they invited me to come and work with them in South Africa. And then I met Hannah and Oli in South Africa. And so it's all been organic. Every single place, it's been that way. And because our work has been oriented towards young people and rites of passage, I've had the opportunity to build relationships with some of the real elders in the field of rites of passage who've been creating community-centered opportunities for their own young people, in particular from BIPOC communities, to come of age in a good way. And it took decades, really 10 years or more, to build relationships with these people, to grow trust to the point where they say, "We love what you're doing." At first, everything was questioned, you know, everything. What does the body have to do with it? You go into nature, it's the body. What's the difference? Young people really need only culturally sensitive rites of passage. You're doing something that's cross-cultural. How's that relevant? And I just had to sit in my seat and say, actually, I think we're doing something that's very relevant. And risk having their young people come and be with us. And also really build relationships with the olders and the elders in these communities, which is a lot of work, so that when the young people would go back, there was a true tracking. And in the cases when there wasn't, it didn't always go so well. It really required the ongoing mentoring, both from our center of Golden Bridge, through me, and then the team that I was slowly building, and from the elders and olders in these wider circles. So I don't know if that answers your question. This is so Disney, but I'm going to do it. I had my first ecstatic experience as a child, and maybe the only one I remember, when I was taken to Disney World and we went into Small World. And I had something happened in me, and maybe it happens to everybody in there, but it was so significant. I could not believe that these beautiful children dressed in these incredible, authentic costumes were dancing to the same music. And it just like stirred me so deeply. And I played with dolls as a child. That was a thing for me. My maternal grandmother would bring me dolls, and my paternal grandmother owned a piece goods store. So I always had my hands in fabric. I was always seeing patterns on cloth and tapestries and weaving. And so there was some alchemical coming together of the dances and the music and the costumes that wasn't some like objectification of other peoples who were different than myself. It was such a soul longing to come to know and to meet in a true way. And I have had the privilege of getting to be deep inside communities, in townships, in favelas, way beyond where the tourists go, into the trenches, into the homes, being with the families of the young people that I work with, and having exchange that is so heartwarming and so such a blessing for all of us. And it's really just, you know, love, actually. Mm. And because I've been willing to sit as a guest in the background for long periods of time till trust gets built, and lean in and go into some of the real hell realms with young people and their families. I've also been invited to sit at the table in places that have graced me and grown me. And I hope I've been able to do the same in return.
It's lovely to hear the story and stories. And two things really stand out. One is this business of what you said at the beginning about just paying attention to who was coming towards you, what was the need right in front of you. So many of us are looking on the horizon somewhere else, you know, or the ego is looking for something. But actually, if we just pay attention to what is the need on our doorstep, often there is a need, and it's lovely to hear that you responded to that. And then in the response to that, it led you places organically. It's beautiful. And it reminds me very much of things that Gabrielle has said to me over years. And actually, Susanna Darling-Khan also has talked very much about this sometimes, the organic pull and to go where you're needed and to follow the need that you see. So very touched by that. So tell us a bit now about SomaSource, which I understand from what you've said is a leadership program, an embodied leadership program, mainly for young people, only for young people. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and it's a good bridge because I just want to share this one thing. Like, I've been to some crazy places, homeless shelters and working with girls in the prison and universities and stuff. And I've come to realize that, like, if the door opens and I can pull it off, go. Because often there's one person in that room who I have a real bit of business with. And I think about when Gabrielle came to Pittsburgh, of all places. You know, I wasn't even going to go. I didn't have childcare, blah, blah, blah. And boom, there she was starting the first training. And I'm not going to get into that story right now, but it's a good one. But it's the same kind of thing. And so over the years, there were all these young people who weren't going away. They were sticking around. And we all know that there's a great deal of respect and complexity in the space around who gets to train whom, especially when there's a root in the five rhythms. Mm-hmm. So for years, I was like not training anybody at all. And yet I was training everybody because when one is bringing something through and inspired, there's a natural transmission. And I was starting to notice that the people who were around me were waking up to their own unique ways of carrying this good work out into the world in meaningful ways. And they were shape-shifting it. That, you know, it was very clear from the beginning, nobody hangs a five-rhythm shingle, even though I think you're all really badass five-rhythms dancers, because I very clearly have that at the root, and that map of human development and that map of how to work with the emotional body, for example, informs my work completely. But what I did was within each of those rhythms, it's like I opened it up and said, okay, if we're going to talk about flowing as the portal for embodiment, for repairing the original imprint of mother and infant, from conception all the way, you know, till we're walking and starting to move into relationship with other, what are the complementary teachings that need to happen in there so that we really can create an experience that really helps people find their ground inside themselves in a deep and profound, ever-expanding way? And I think I have mentioned this, Tim, that I was doing my own healing work when Peter Levine was just really pioneering his work right here in Boulder. And I just got on everybody's table and also had the opportunity to do a little bit of work with Peter. And I started to understand how complementary those two maps were, the rhythms and the somatic experiencing, and a number of other modalities, starting with my own body. Same thing with the emotional landscape. It's like, okay, great that we can befriend our emotions and start to track how they're working through our nervous systems and our sensations, which of course came from Peter's work. But and we can express and we can sing and we can, you know, speak and all that good stuff. But how do we communicate, actually? How do we then do something with that so that we're building bridges rather than not annihilating each other? And Lord knows, I have had plenty of work about how to regulate my own emotional body so that I can have conversations. And then, you know, so it was studying Marshall Rosenberg's work and studying some other things, and then seeing how we can shape-shift that so that it's developmentally sound for working with young people. So a lot of that happened with the young people. A lot. Okay, I'm going to fast forward because within every rhythm, there's a massive teaching. And of course, the place for me, not of course, but for me, the most exciting place ultimately is in that adolescent chaos place. And there's so much curriculum that we developed. And I went and did a doctoral study and contexted this in youth development and in rites of passage cross-culturally, and really, and brought the dance and the body into the zeitgeist around rites of passage. And so these people were learning this work, they were studying it, they were starting to be given opportunities to teach with me. And there just came a point when it was like, I've really built a training here and we need to name it as such. And I was clear enough within myself that I could differentiate how this was different than Gabrielle's beautiful training, and where the overlaps were, what the ethics were around how to hold that, and where there was so much differentiation. And I had to unapologetically and very respectfully both own it and move it forward. And another piece to this, which I just want to speak to, I had to also be ready to have a different kind of relationship with my students, because I had been... In my book, I write about different developmental stages of mentoring people in general, but young people specifically. And, you know, sometimes you're carrying them, you know, you're just carrying them. And sometimes you're really giving them a lot of discipline. And sometimes they're in a big individuation with you. And that very complicated space when people move from being like growing up in your work to starting to get some power and some energy and wanting to become colleagues, but really not being there. There's a huge apprenticeship that needs to happen there. And then if things go well, there really can be that movement into colleagueship. Sometimes that requires people to leave and come back. Sometimes they can stay. But it required something in me, a fierce discernment and an unwillingness to accommodate anybody's neuroses around where they think they are and my understanding with a team around me of where people actually are, because I'm not interested in having people carry the Soma Source name who are not really waking up to how their shadow is operating in their universe, because we all have shadows and it's always operating, but we need to, as we know, become ever more conscious of that. And so I remember when Gabrielle, it was really something, years and years and years ago, there were a ton of us at Westerbeck, and we were maybe graduating something from some phase, I think the heartbeat phase, and she gave us all these little rattles, and she was like, and they were beautiful little rattles, I still have mine, she was like, that's about as much power as you all have. And I was like, what are you talking about? And you know what, she was right. She was totally right. It was like, you have this much power, dudes. So carry on. You're great. Keep moving and humble yourself. And so to be able to sit in my seat around that and also keep humbling myself, because this is obviously a growing path at all times, just was a big part of me being able to train people. So the Soma Source path has emerged organically. It has a lot of formality to it now. We've had, we've got about 4 cohorts, 2 that are fully through and 2 that got caught in the crosshairs of COVID. And by summer of 2022, we hope to have everybody finished except for a handful of people who really came in late in the game but are so in resonance with who we are that we're going to hold them. And, you know, there's just developmental pieces that people have to do in their inner work and in their outer studies and in their practice out in the world. And there's a lot of mentoring that happens to make that so.
And how much of that happens, like where they are online with you, how much of that involves them coming to some geographical place to be together?
Great question. The first groups, it was all geography. We used to be together for 5 weeks every summer. It was awesome. Those days are long gone. But there was the first crew really had that kind of a training with me and with each other, all of us. And that was a substantial group of people. Ramon was in that group, for example, and many other epic souls. Hannah Lowenthal was there some of that time. We before COVID, we were already doing our social justice work online. I was already teaching the stages of the Soma Source map online because our community is so global and we can't do it all in the summers when people come together. So a lot of it's online. A lot of it requires people being serious about taking up their own studies. And they either do or they don't, but it all shows up at graduation time. And there's a real, now with COVID, everybody has to send in their competencies and respond to some very rigorous questions. And I'm not looking at anybody doing it the same as anybody else, but I want to know how you have digested this material and are applying it into the context where you, not you, but are serving. And it's exciting. And it's sometimes very nuanced. And sometimes it's very obvious. Like there's a homeschool around the corner, and Megan Chandler, who's just one of the most brilliant leaders in our work, she writes stories that are culturally sound for all these homeschool children. And you can see unity circles in there and dolphin discos and so many things, but it's never taught as that because it's not. Mm. And all the understanding around how to not appropriate people's incredible teachings, but how to educate young people about a wider world in Boulder, where it has been in the past very white. It's changing, and sheltered and privileged. So that's just one fun example. And it's just beautiful to see how the work we do with adolescents and the coming of age and understanding fertility across all genders, how that's embedded in the education in a school setting without it looking like, you know, we're doing moon circles. But they are actually. So I feel really happy to see how it's just moving out there.
And so when, actually I have a question before that question. So do you get funding to do this, or how do you make it work financially? Because one of the big things about so many of the schools that are involved in the ICMTA is that you have to be in the top 1% financially of the world in order to even consider being a trained teacher with a lot of those schools. So how do you make that work financially?
Yeah, that's obviously one of the huge questions. So there are a lot of different pieces. There was a time that our work was substantially supporting a certain percentage of all our work. And that was from, you know, the weekly movement masses, where we have a large group of people. We were a very small, humble organization. Again, who's around us, who needs work, who has skills, how can we work together? We're raising your children, so come help run the organization. Like really that, a bunch of single moms, to be really honest, from the beginning. Now it's changed. So we have some programming that supports the work. We have a group of people who I have spent years developing relationships with, and I was really thinking about this, who just said, we're gonna back you. And that's a privilege. That's like incredible. I've put some of my own resources into it, and I've had others who've actually poured substantial resources into this. That's not indefinite, but we are, you know, right now we're looking at, can we have a 3 to 5 year commitment from different funding sources? Mm. When I did my doctoral work, I was a fellow in the School for Social Innovation, and I learned a lot about how to do fundraising, and we've done some fundraising events that have been really successful. Mm. We have a ton of people who just are happy to contribute consistently smaller amounts. And we have a ton of in-kind support from local corporations, huge, from individuals, parents, and local corporations. And then as the work has grown, we've had corporate support. With our branding, with some of our social media stuff. And again, that's all about relationship. Mm. And I am seeing that I will be doing more of that going forward, because I know that if we can tell our story properly, and we're in that process, that we're so close to a whole host of business people who would really like to help these social entrepreneurs that have come of age through this work and are now doing really innovative and integrative work out in the world, that they really want to mentor them in ways I can't, my team can't, so that they can be successful as they go out and do their work in the Democratic Republic of the Congo or Uganda or wherever, in Ogallala Lakota Sioux at the reservation. And already some corporate people are working directly with some of these folks. So it's been a hodgepodge. There's been an enormous amount of funding. There's been a hell of a lot of work on the ground. There's been a lot of people that have contributed. And I work really hard. I do. I mean, I think we all do. But when you're mentoring youth, there were years that I was around the clock on call, going in, bailing people out, you know, middle of the night crises, all that stuff. And I pushed it. I was sick in my mid-50s. I had to change that game. And pass it to the Soma Source leaders who are happy to do that and want to do it and great at it.
I mean, I know that a lot of people at the gathering were really moved by the extent of the work that you've been doing and the communities and people that you've touched and been with and who have then come in and informed your work. If people had money or if they knew of funding streams that they would love to connect, what do? They just email you, or is there a place where they can donate on your website?
Thank you, Tim. There are a variety of ways. Definitely people can email me. And on the website, on both Golden Girls Global, which is this gorgeous initiative that's really focused on girls, those who are questioning, those who are sometimes girls, and those who are just fully identified as girls around the world. And it's a strong, strong cohort. One of the collective initiatives that's birthed through Golden Bridge and me. There's a way to fund right on that website, and there's a way to fund on the Golden Bridge website, and there's a way to be specific. Hey, I want to support this kind of work or that kind of work.
Oh, wow.
I'm also just happy to talk with people directly. Yeah. And if people, you know, we're in this, like I said to you earlier, we're in a reconstruction, deconstruction, reconstruction at this moment within Golden Bridge. And so that we can get our funding even stronger. One of the intentions. And there'll be a way for people with skills to be able to hopefully, and this part is the hopeful, really build relationships directly with people. And the reason I say hopeful there is it takes some real discerning how to support people to come into working with people in more marginalized communities and not perpetuate the problems and not violate the hard work we've done to build right relationship. And I've seen that stuff go awry. And so pouring money into communities indiscriminately is not what we're about at all. We're very mindful about how we do that and how we support resources coming from all directions and those who are receiving them being really well supported so they can be accountable with what happens with that.
Right. That sounds great. And if people know young people or come across young people that they think would be just perfect for this, for your program, presuming you know COVID passes and there's space to dream of new things, what do you have criteria? Do you have a way of thinking about who you're looking to work with in that in the Soma Source program?
Well, we have a couple entry points, and Surfing the Creative, which is our summer youth camp, summer in the Northern Hemisphere, winter in the Southern. Usually in July is a really good entry point. Nobody even gets considered really for Soma Source. And at this point, we don't have the next cohort. We're not even trying to make that happen. It will happen when the right energies, you know, within me and within we is here. But Surfing the Creative is a great place for people to come in and just partake and learn and be in the community and go through their own rite of passage. And we do it for youth and adults, not just youth. For years, it was just youth. And then so many adults said, wait, what about us? And so we have sometimes youth and adults together and sometimes separate. The other thing is before COVID and before I went through cancer, we were scheduled to do Surfing the Creatives in England. Actually, I was so excited to do it there and enact it fully in different parts of the world. We've done many programs in different parts of the world. So that's something that we have the team to do. And that could be very much a part of the future. And those are wonderful entry points. And then there's just, we'll see. There's already a lot of people who say, hey, some who would like to do the next training. And we're just going to wait until that's time.
Hmm.
Especially because we have a whole crew of people who we really want to finish with well.
Yeah. What touches me about it is young people. Like, I mean, I love all the other schools and what they're doing. But I know what it's like to be a teenager with a with needs, intentions. Like, I was a young leader, and it was very hard to find maps, sensitivity, cultural understanding of who I was and what I might want to do in the world. And it's very exciting to me that there might be such a place for people. And of course, you know, there's a lot of privilege in Europe and in America, and I hear that, you know, your intention is for this work to be actually happening in other places than those places. So you'll do what you can do. But yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah, I'll just say this. I was teaching in schools, and I just was like, there was always a limit on what I was allowed to do. And I just said, forget about it. Just teach the teachers and let them take it everywhere and into the classroom. And so a lot of my mandate is let the next generation do the work with the youth. Although I love being in there, love being in there. But I need to work with the people who are going to be working with the young people personally.
Yeah, I remember you said at the gathering that you're stepping out of the center somehow of Golden Bridge. Sounded like another big threshold transition, rite of passage for you and for the organization. Any thoughts? I imagine it's massive and you haven't done it yet, but any thoughts about that next step for you?
Well, we're in it. We're just looking at how do we restructure this. I'm so grateful to ICMTA for the ways in which I've been schooled in sociocracy, dynamic governance, seeing it at work. We've embedded some of the principles. We have working circles and double linking. And, you know, we're just in this process. Where can I step back? Where do I want to step back? And what do I really need to be doing? Who can carry what pieces? And we're teasing that out right now. And I definitely need to get back to my art. I've gotten a little too far away from it. And that's part of it. And I am a social artist, maybe above and beyond anything else. So this whole dance with the organization is part of my creative expression in this life. So I think in 3 months, we're going to be in the new. We're like really in it right now.
Great. Yeah. Wonderful. Just my last question is, it relates a bit to money. Well, we talked about money, if people had money, but what if there are ICMTA members that have skills? You said something earlier before we started recording this about maybe mentoring or maybe bringing expertise into some of the things that you do. If there were people that were called to do something like that, can you say a little bit about what that might look like? I know it's very early days, but what's your dream about that?
Well, you know, we've always had, like, in the summers, we have somebody who's a volunteer coordinator, and we do really well with that. And then the rest of the year, people say, we really want to help. But part of our restructuring will be to make sure we have the right person that people can contact. But I have this fantasy that some of these seasoned movement teachers could partner with some of these leaders who certainly know how to dance, certainly know how to be in their bodies, but maybe don't have as much training and experience about how to do that kind of work in their communities. Maybe they're working more through the arts with the people, the women or the young people that they're working with, and they could have some mentoring around that. And that could be a really symbiotic connection in so, so many ways, because of course, people want to help. People want to make a difference. And they also want to be able to be in a learning with the people of the world on the ground, in the trenches, with diverse communities. So there could be some cross-pollinating there around things.
Mm.
And certainly in the business piece, but I think we're all trying to learn how to be business people together. I don't think necessarily that one. And I, above all, there's an openness to hear from you all and live into this. I feel the teachers gathering was seminal in a certain way. Certainly we got to meet each other in a very intimate way. And the, you know, our leaders were like, oh, this is beautiful. Who are these people? What's happening in here? And I think that in the same way, some of the members of ICMTA had a certain like, whoa, we had no idea. And so really strong seeds have been planted. There's a lot of good energy to keep tending that. And I think it's still to be revealed, Tim, to be really honest.
Absolutely. And I know that you're in a conversation with Andrew Holmes and other people about this. And even as it evolves, you know, we've got the newsletter. So you'll let us know, yeah, if there are crystallized ideas that you want some help with, or you want to see if other people are energy for. I just know, talking to so many people in the gathering and around it, people were excited by what you're doing in a way that is unusual. So I really hope that that isn't just a one-off. I really hope some of these seeds grow. I think they will. And I want to be part of that too. So, yeah.
Well, Tim, one thing that's clear to me is I want to do an in-person big cross-school gathering here in Boulder at the Avalon Ballroom. And, you know, I even reserved a bunch of dates for spring Northern Hemisphere 2022, which may be too soon. But I have even a name for it, but I don't want to go that far.
You do have a name.
I do.
What's your name?
Passing the Torch.
Wow. Passing the Torch.
Yeah. So, anyway, I just feel there's this intergenerational, cross-cultural, cross-school thing that could happen in the body. And I don't want to be pretentious in any way. But I do think Boulder being where it is in the middle of this country, and because of who our community is, and I'm not attached to that name. I just see that there's some waking up for our generation, my generation. I'm first generation teacher of the Five Rhythms, around how do we step into, and I know that others of my peers are doing this, I know that, into really sitting in our next seat, which is not about disappearing, actually. It's about sitting in our next seat and truly amplifying the next generation work that is different than ours and critical for these times. And how do we sort of respectfully do what traditional cultures know how to do really well? We don't in the Western world. We toss out the gray hair peeps. And I've been through my ego death around all of that. And I understand about lifting up and standing behind. And I'm not done by any means. And so there's something about those conversations that I think could be really rich. And I'm definitely talking with all kinds of people around that. But also I think being in the room together and moving our bodies and smelling each other and listening to different ways of teaching, not just the dance, but some of this other stuff, would be a very helpful step in figuring out who we all are to each other.
Yeah. And one of the things I hear in there is not just that it's an ICMTA event, but it's ICMTA plus a whole number of other organizations, the schools themselves, perhaps. I like that. Like, we've normally just done an ICMTA thing, and actually maybe this collaborative thing would be, and you know, passing the baton is a lovely phrase for me. My father used it when he was dying. He said, actually not to me, but to his grandchildren, who are the generation next, he had a little chat with all of them, but in the last week or two, and he said he was passing the baton. And it's such a sweet idea that, of course, you get to hold it for so long and then you get to pass it on to somebody. So let's pass it around.
And passing the baton, it's sort of one or both, either one, you know. Mm. Yeah, but the metaphor can be called something else altogether, but that metaphor. And I think that's also...
I have one here. Okay. After he died, my dad's oldest friend gave me this, and it's a homemade baton, but it's very beautiful, and it lives in this room.
So beautiful. I'm so glad you got it. Good. Well, let's hold it together.
Yeah.
And as we bring this to close,
I can't put it through the camera.
We're here. Yeah, my deepest prayer, actually, is that we all take really good care of ourselves, so that we can continue to have these conversations for a long time to come. And this work can really cook us. And we've all, you know, been work to work. And that we can keep really trusting right timing and deepen in these right relationships and keep our dates with destiny and take that original imprint that we all received, that the dance is for everybody, for real, and that we can continue to help that, make that so, and not be afraid of how we're all gonna be asked to be changed. And it's happening, it's happening. And I'm so grateful to have met you on the journey, Tim, really life-changing. Oh,
great pleasure for me too, Melissa, and thank you for this conversation. We'll send it out. I hope people listen to it. And we'll continue it with the baton one of these days.
You know what? It's in the wind.
Yeah.
It's out there.
Great. Thank you.